Hey friends, it's your pal Mike Shea from Sly Flourish. Today, we are going to do a tier ranking of all of the campaigns that I have run from 2014 to today. We're going to go through all of the campaigns that I've run for not just 5th edition, but also other RPGs that I've had over the past 10 years. We're going to be ranking them on an S through F tier rate. It's going to be a really good time, but it's also going to be particularly valuable to you as a GM. We're going to talk about that in a minute. This show is brought to you by the patrons of Sly Flourish. Patrons get access to all kinds of exclusive adventures, access to the awesome Lazy DM community over on Discord, the Patreon Q&A where you can ask me questions directly. They get tons and tons of material to help you run your games, and you help me put on shows like this. To the patrons of Sly Flourish, thank you so much. And for everyone else, please check out my Patreon. You get a really awesome amount of stuff for a very low price. It's really worthwhile. I've been thinking about doing this show for a while, and it felt originally a little bit self-serving. Like, what value is it to you as a GM if I'm going through all of the campaigns that I've run since 2014, especially if I'm switching from different campaign styles, different systems, all kinds of things? How is that actually valuable to you? So I wanted to make sure that this is valuable to GMs, and this is how we're going to do it. My goal for this video is not to convince you how you should rank your own campaigns. It is not to show you which campaigns you should run or which ones you shouldn't. My goal for this video is to help all of us come up with clear criteria that define good campaigns and bad campaigns for us individually, and then using those criteria to help guide which campaigns we're going to run in the future. So my criteria for determining a good campaign from a bad campaign, which is often based on the material that I'm using to do it, is not the same as your criteria. You get to decide what matters to you. But hopefully this process of thinking about these and the conversations that we'll have during this video give you ideas about how you would rank your previous campaigns to give you a list of criteria that you can use to define what campaigns you want to run in the future. You're going to want to comment on this video, or you're going to want to send me email on the podcast or something like that. What I would love to hear about is the criteria that you define for your campaigns. What are the criteria that you have found to be particularly useful for deciding what kind of campaigns you want to run? When you buy a product and you open it up and you start reading it, you start reviewing it, what are the things that you're personally looking for that help you decide whether or not this is going to be a good campaign? Or if you're thinking about a campaign and you're reading reviews and you're listening to podcasts and you're watching YouTube videos, what are the things you're listening for to determine whether or not you're going to enjoy this particular campaign? I think that's really valuable. I think it could probably save us a lot of money if we know what those criteria are and you're able to identify those criteria and then place them on a product and determine whether or not that product is going to meet it. I think that can really help. That's what I really want to hear about. So, some ground rules for this. One is, this is covering the campaigns that I've run since 2014 to today. So about 10 years worth of campaigns. The campaigns are a mix of a bunch of different things. They are hardcover published campaign adventures, many of them from Wizards of the Coast. Some of them are smaller adventures or small campaigns that I've blown up into bigger campaigns. Some of them are homebrew, and a lot of them are using 5th edition D&D, but a lot of them are using other game systems as well. So it's really not a totally fair comparison, because we're going to be comparing some things among these that really don't fit. Like, how do you compare running Tomb of Annihilation to running Blades in the Dark? The one thing that matters, though, is it's you and your friends sitting around a table spending your time running a campaign. So that's kind of where we get the comparison of those rankings. Even though one of them is a short campaign, one of them is longer, one is 5th edition, one is a totally different system, we are still going to look at those and decide, like, how do we rank those among? Because the one variable that we have is time. The one variable that matters for all of these is the time that we're spending around the table hanging out with our friends playing a game. And that time is super valuable. And we want to maximize the value of that time. We want to make sure we're running something that we really love. The rankings only reflect my view. I am keeping in consideration what my players have said about it, though. So I have talked to my players about this, but I'm not balancing how the players felt about it, how I felt about it. It's really how I felt, but I'm certainly taking player stuff into consideration. And really, in all of these campaigns I've run, I've never really had a truly bad one. We've definitely had some that were great and fantastic and we all loved. And then we had some that people were like, well, it was fine. I don't know that anybody regretted the time. Right? I don't know that there's any of these where I've regretted having done it at all. I've definitely regretted ones where I wish I could have run something else and I ran this instead. And I think we would all had a better time if I ran something else. So that's happened. But I've never truly had a bad time. So some of the things that I know about myself and how I like adventures, it's not like I haven't thought about this already. I enjoy running homebrew and heavily modified adventures in existing published settings. I've done this a few times now. I know that these tend to rank better for me than when I'm running a fully published adventure. To me, the value of a product really comes to how much work I have to do to make it work for me. I don't mind doing that work. I just don't want to have to do that work. I don't want to look at an adventure and immediately say, wow, I'm definitely going to have to modify this because I don't like it. That's not what I'm looking for. A published product is supposed to make my life easier, not make it harder. I'm always happy to modify adventures when I want to. I'm not happy to modify them when I have to. Usually I'm able to define what I'm not going to like in a published adventure on like a quick skim read, especially when I see the overall plot or structure of it. I can usually tell, yeah, this plot or structure is not going to work well for me, or I don't like these plot elements or something like that. I'm usually able to define those pretty early. Many cases, I wish I had listened to my gut and said, you know what, I'm going to pass on it. But usually for the sake of popularity, I ran it anyway, and then sometimes it was a mistake. And honestly, I really wish Wizards of the Coast focused more on setting books than on published adventures. They have been doing a lot of published adventures. I've run some of them. Other ones I've read and immediately said, yeah, that's not what I'm interested in. And Wizards seems to be very interested in making big adventures and not making campaign settings, when they have published some of the best campaign settings I've ever read. I love Ravnica. A lot of people really love Theros. Eberron, Rising from the Last War is excellent. Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft is excellent. I want more books like that. And those are a lot harder to screw up because I get to build whatever structure around it that I want. That's something I really wish they had done. All right, let's stop talking about that. Let's start doing some rankings. Let's start talking about it. Now, these are not in any particular order. They are like, I think they're in order by like how I threw the files in for the icon. So we're not going to be doing them starting from 2014 and going to 2024. It's going to be all throughout. And we're starting with Shadow of the Demon Lord. So right away, we're starting with a weird one. Shadow of the Demon Lord is an RPG by Rob Schwab. I ran a short 11-session campaign in this. I really enjoyed it. My players really enjoyed it. It is super dark. So I think the one detriment that I will say is that because it is a super dark campaign, that was something that I had to manage during it. But I love the system. My players love the system. My players today, we did this like in 2017 or 2018. It was pretty soon after Shadow of the Demon Lord came out. So we had stopped playing 5th edition for a while. We did a couple of other systems and then went back to 5th edition. This was one of them and my players really liked it. So I'm definitely going to rank this as an A tier. I really liked it. I'd say the only aspect to it is because it is a pretty grim system that requires a little bit of management. But an A tier is a really good tier, and I really enjoyed it. Numenera, so I ran this a couple of years ago now, and I really enjoyed the system a lot. From a GM perspective, it is a fantastic system. I wish my players liked it more, but a lot of the weird mechanics of Numenera on the player side made some of my players never understood how things went. And I'll give an example. Numenera and the Cypher system sells itself on this really simple idea that everything has a level from 0, from 1 to 10, 1 being really easy and 10 being really hard. If you want to know what difficulty class you have to roll on, you multiply that tier by 3. So a level 5 threat, for example, would have a DC of 15. That way you can make a monster with just a DC. And on the GM side, that's fantastic. But then how the players decide what they're going to roll, they have to use, they have effort and they have edge and they have these other things. And an example was they can lower the tier that they're rolling on by expending 3 points from one of their pools. If they have edge, they get to discount how often they do that. So if they have an edge of 1, they can subtract 1 from the amount that they have to spend. So instead of spending 3 points to lower it a tier, which would take it from like a 15 to a 12, they only have to spend 2. So they're particularly good at it, so they get to do it. You can also do it multiple times, but the second time you do it, you get an automatic discount of 1. And this is what I'm talking about. Like, there's all these like weird bits of like, well, effort, what's the difference between effort and edge is a hard thing to explain. Then saying like, well, when you do it a second time, you get another automatic discount, but you don't add your edge. And it gets really confusing. So I had players where we played for months. We played for like 5 or 6 months, and they never understood how that worked. It never really clicked with them. The other one is when we hit really high levels, the math kind of broke down. Now, all that said, the Numenera setting is fantastic. And I look back at the story that we told there, and I think myself and my players really, really loved it. But I'm going to probably put it into B or C. I'm going to put it into a B because I loved it so much. My players would probably almost certainly put it lower than that. But I thought the story was excellent, and I thought from a GM standpoint, I really, really enjoyed running it. Now we have Rime of the Frostmaiden, and I am putting Rime of the Frostmaiden right down into the F tier. I wish this is one of the few adventures that I wish I had not run. I unfortunately ran it twice for two different groups. And this was the adventure that finally broke me of the idea that I should try to run Wizards of the Coast published adventures so that I can help other people run them. That's something I had done for many years, and two adventures in particular broke me of that habit. And Rime of the Frostmaiden was one of them. The other one is Descent into Avernus, which we'll come to. The adventures just didn't work for me. Talk about an adventure that made me do a lot of work. There's a lot of times where the story fell apart. There was a lot of imbalance. They throw like the monsters that they throw at you at level one are too hard. There's too much material. It's like 10 towns and all the stuff that's going on in 10 towns. When I ran it, I really didn't like it. The Frostmaiden itself didn't make any sense. There's like weird imbalances in the monsters that you face and how difficult you think they should be. So like you're facing a god and she's like CR 10. It really just didn't make sense on a lot of levels. It has a lot of weird stuff in it. It's got like, you know, you certainly have like, you know, trigger warnings for cannibalism, but there's also like strange bouts of incest in it. There's really just strange stuff. It was a very weirdly written adventure. I didn't like it when I read it, and then I ran it and realized I didn't like it when I ran it either. Now, my players really liked it. My players had a lot of fun with it. They thought there was a lot of story that they told. They really enjoyed a lot what was going on. And that was because I rewrote a lot of it. I had to do a lot of work to get it there. And you know what else? I could have just done that as a homebrew campaign instead. I really didn't feel like I needed it. So anyway, that was an F tier. Made me do a lot of work, a lot of weird stuff I had to deal with, very strange structure for the adventure. You know, I did not dig it. Wild Beyond the Witchlight, on the other hand, I really loved. It is a more linear kind of adventure, and it had a couple of little odd bits with like, and my friend Teos Abadia talked about this, that like it has weird bits with the backgrounds where like, you know, you're running the adventure. They talked about this on Mastering Dungeons, that the backgrounds that you get don't actually fit the structure of the adventure. And this is a common problem that I've seen with Wizards of the Coast adventures, where they try to give character options and the character options don't match the story of the adventure that they're going to do. This happens in Spelljammer. It happens here. It happens in a couple of other ones where the backgrounds that they give you don't fit the theme of the adventure. That was actually very minor. I really loved, I'm trying to think, is there anything that I really didn't like about it? It does have sort of a bit of a surprise ending, but I didn't feel like I had to modify it in order to suit it. I did modify it heavily, but I didn't feel like I had to. I really liked it. I'm going to put an S tier. One of the things is like it seems harder to put an adventure up in S tier because we rank that so much higher. But I think Wild Beyond the Witchlight was an S tier adventure. I really, really loved it. Blades in the Dark. I really want to love Blades in the Dark, and I kind of didn't. My players did love it a lot, and I think the system is really interesting, but it was shockingly complicated for what I would have considered a more story-focused system. It also just didn't fit the style of gaming that I do. The way that I operate as a GM and the kind of things that I'm happy to do don't really fit with how Blades worked. But I found a lot of complexity with Blades that made it hard for me to run and hard for me to get my hands around during prep and you know, whether or not I even should be doing prep. So I'm going to put it down in D tier. I think it was really interesting. I like the setting, but I found it very dense for what I would consider to be, and I guess what my expectation was for a lightweight RPG. My players adored it. My players loved it. We did a short campaign, only 5 or 6 sessions in it, so we didn't do a ton. But my players really loved it. They loved it more than I did. And this, unlike Numenera, they understood the mechanics more than I did. So I'm being a little harsh by putting it in D tier. It could probably almost certainly be in C tier. But I just, you know, it's one where like, I think that for me to get it to the place where I would want to run it, I'd have to change a lot of it. I'd have to change like the whole like system of gangs. It was like you had 3 different character sheets because you had your gang sheet, you had your sheet, your gang sheet, your headquarters sheet. There's all these like different levels and tiers and different phases of the game where the mechanics changed. It felt very complicated to me. Curse of Strahd. I adore Curse of Strahd. I love this adventure. I ran it for 2 different groups. I think that Curse of Strahd And there's a couple of adventures on here that fit this style, has the exact kind of adventure model I want, which is what I refer to as a yam-shaped adventure model. This is a term that my wife came up with. And the yam-shaped adventure model is you have a clear start, you have a clear area where the game begins, then it widens out and you can do lots of different things in lots of different ways, and there's lots of room for the campaign to go in lots of different directions, lots of agency that the players have in guiding the future direction, and then it culminates back down into a big, strong conclusion. And Curse of Strahd is definitely like that. You start off with Death House if you're using the Death House adventure. And Death House gets a bunch of complaints. I actually didn't find it very hard to do the Death House because I started them at second level instead of first level, and then it worked great. And after you get through Death House, then you sort of expand out into the lands of Barovia. They get to explore Barovia. There's lots of cool places they can go. You can sort of, because you roll on where those different items are that the characters need to pick up, they can travel to lots of different places. Lots of room for the politics and the different factions to kind of change and operate. But then it culminates back down into you going to Castle Ravenloft, crawling through Castle Ravenloft, and eventually facing Strahd. I think it's the best adventure. I love it. I love this adventure very much. And so it's not hard for me to put it in S tier. I think Curse of Strahd is excellent. Descent into Avernus, down in F tier. So what happened with Descent into Avernus? Oh, what a mess. I think, I from what I had heard, the production of this adventure was a great big mess. And some of it came from marketing, where I'm making some of this up. Some of this I had heard. Some of this I've heard from various podcasts and from kind of open conversations with people. And some of it, I think I might be filling in the blanks with my own model in my head or what I think might have occurred. When they started off making Descent into Avernus, Larian was just beginning to make Baldur's Gate 3 and just about to announce Baldur's Gate 3. This is many years ago, well before the release of Baldur's Gate 3. And they said, we need to add Baldur's Gate in there. So they kind of shoehorned in a whole other section into this book that broke the whole structure about why you would be doing this. And my understanding, I actually have two friends who both worked heavily on this book, and one of them had to rewrite all of the work of the other, was directed to rewrite all of the work of the other, because they changed so much of the adventure in order to support this marketing campaign of Baldur's Gate. So Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus was heavily modified because they wanted to do marketing for Baldur's Gate to tie the connection between Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 3 by Larian Studios. And it wrecked the adventure, in my opinion. The other one is it has very strange, when I talk about like a broken structure for an adventure, things that just don't work very well. There's no motivation for the characters to actually engage with the adventure in Descent into Avernus. Instead, there's a really excellent product written by Anthony Joyce and Justice Armand. Justice Armand now works for Wizards of the Coast, called Fall of Elturel. You can get on the DM's Guild. And Fall of Elturel is a much better introduction to Descent into Avernus than the actual introduction to Descent into Avernus. And when I ran it, the characters had no problem with that motivation. The problem is the motivation changes. And then when you get into Hell and you're actually going through and following the adventure, the morality of the characters comes into question. And the big one there that like one of my players had a big problem with, and we're like, wow, yeah, that really is bad, is soul coins. There's this whole idea that there's this currency in Hell of soul coins, and a soul coin contains the soul of a mortal entity, and you can use them to drive a car. So if you think about it, taking an eternal soul and destroying it is way worse than murder, and you're doing it to drive a car a little bit of a distance. That just made no sense. My players immediately like, wait a minute, why would we do that? Any good that we're doing to try to save the people of Elturel is totally destroyed by us burning soul coins. So we changed it into a demon ichor, in which you killed demons and you took their precious bodily fluids and fed them into your car, and that drove your car, and that worked a lot better. It's things like that we had to fix. Also, the whole structure of the adventure, the three tiers, the three paths that you can follow are very, each of them are like, oh, well, you get a choice, kind of, but then they're very linear. Really didn't work out. So I did not like Descent into Avernus. It was another one that I wish I had run something else. And they're probably my two lowest adventures on this list. Eberron Rising from the Last War. You're like, hey, Mike, that's not an adventure. That's a campaign setting. Yes, I know, but I run two homebrew long campaigns using Eberron Rising from the Last War as my base. And we had a ball, and I absolutely loved it. And this is where I came to that idea of like, you know, running homebrew adventures in published campaign settings, I think can work way better than trying to run big. I think that us building our own campaigns means that we're going to get exactly what we want. And we get all of the value of the material that we get in a large campaign setting, which makes me wish Wizards of the Coast did more of that. I really wish that there was more of that. So I really loved Eberron Rising from the Last War, and I would definitely recommend it again. Empire of the Ghouls. I just finished my Empire of the Ghouls campaign. It was almost a two-year campaign. I think it was 20 months that we played Empire of the Ghouls. It was an absolute blast. I really really loved it. Empire of the Ghouls, the structure of it is actually kind of similar to Storm King's Thunder. It's got chapters, and each chapter is its own adventure, but in those chapters is a lot of room for you to go. Some of the chapters are absolutely massive. Some of the chapters are relatively focused. My own campaign loosely followed the adventure, but I changed a lot to fit what I needed. But I felt like I had the support of the adventure and certainly the support of the rest of the material from Midgard to be able to do that. That said, Empire of the Ghouls has one problem, which is there's so much travel in it. And it's kind of by design, because it's designed as sort of a travelogue of Midgard, or certainly the center, like from the north to the south of Midgard. But there's one adventure, you travel like 2,700 miles, and it's like months of travel. And then there's like, you travel down, you go on an adventure, and then you travel back again. And figuring out how to keep the pace of the adventure going with all of that travel took me a fair bit of work. I ended up capturing into things like the Shadow Roads and the Cat Slides and the Red Portals. I had to come up with ways and reasons for the characters to be able to do that travel a little bit easier than they did. So that did take some work. However, I really loved it, so I'm still putting it in an A tier. Not S tier because of that travel problem, but in an A tier. Ghosts of Saltmarsh. Ghosts of Saltmarsh is kind of a campaign and kind of a set of loosely tied adventures built in the Greyhawk setting of Saltmarsh. And it includes a bunch of classic adventures from all the way from first edition to, I think, through third edition that are level appropriate so you can go from one to the other. I ran this for two different groups as a campaign setting, and I really loved it. It was an excellent campaign setting. It had a lot of fun intrigue. Some of the design that they did with Ghosts of Saltmarsh, I really loved. For example, they have sort of a gazetteer of the area around Saltmarsh, which on its own can be an entire campaign setting. It's only like 10 pages or so, but it was so rich in the material that they put in those 10 pages that I felt like I could run a campaign. I've actually used that as a model for Ruins of the Grendelrood and the City of Arches. I love that style so much, that how much campaign you can pack into a small amount of area, that I really saw it as a strength. I didn't even scratch the surface of what I could have done running this adventure. There is only one of the adventures in this book that I use as an example of probably the worst published adventure that I've ever run. So I can't put it at the S tier because it's not exactly close to perfect because of that one adventure. And that adventure was Isle of the Abbey. I felt like the structure, it was actually a good example of a really bad dungeon design, but also like it taught me a lot about downward beats, where like you go through this dungeon and you're just getting attacked by specters and shot by traps the whole time. There's a lot of problems with that adventure that makes it actually a really good example as a bad adventure. Isle of the Abbey was not great, but everything else in it I really enjoyed, and I love the campaign I ran, and I think it's just a fantastic book with a lot of stuff in it, and I really love the campaign that I ran. So I'm putting it in A tier. I think it has a flaw, but I really enjoyed it. And A tier is really good. These are all A tier stuff is really good. Horde of the Dragon Queen. Horde of the Dragon Queen was the second adventure I ran for 5th edition D&D next to Lost Mine of Phandelver. It is a very linear adventure, and like Empire of the Ghouls, it also has a lot of travel. It had some flaws in it because they didn't even have all of the mechanics worked out for how monsters worked. So there were some imbalances there. But I did enjoy it. I ran it for both of my groups. I'm going to stick it in B tier because it took a little bit more work than I would hope to get it exactly where I wanted it. I don't, you know, can you run it? I mean, I know people that have run it many, many times and love it and run it pretty much as it's written many, many times. So for other people, it could definitely be higher. But I feel pretty good that my campaign there was a B tier campaign. Dragons of Icespire Peak. Dragons of Icespire Peak is the, I'm spoiling, spoiler, it's going in S tier. Dragon of Icespire Peak is the adventure that comes with the D&D Essentials box set, which is a tremendous value for D&D. And Dragon of Icespire Peak has one of the best adventure structures that I've ever seen. Some people don't like it because of how simple and straightforward it is. The idea of going to a job board, picking up jobs, and going off is not the same as sort of the more rich stories that you get with kind of story-focused RPGs. But I do believe that a lot of times the stories that happen are the stories that the characters bring to the table, not necessarily what the adventure brings. The style of it is really digestible. Each of the adventures that are in here, because it's kind of a bunch of smaller adventures tied together, are 2 to 4 pages long, so they're very easy to digest. Actually, I'm going to take it down one notch to A tier, and that's because the first adventures that you run are deadly for first level characters. there's something about these starter adventures that make them really want to kill characters. And I do feel like you, the one thing that you have to do when you're running Dragon of Icespire Peak is be particularly careful at level one. So I'm knocking it down from S tier to A tier because of that. The killing first level characters sucks. I think it's a terrible way to start a D&D campaign. I think it's a terrible way to teach DMs. It's like, hey, everybody, oh, life needs to be hard and you should be killed. Come on, people want to have an actual adventure. But I really love the style and structure. It has a model in there that I use all the time myself now, which is sort of the two of three model. And the idea is you give three possible adventure scenarios to the players. They pick one, you go on that one. They come back and pick another one, and you go on that one. And when they come back, the third one you take off the list and you come up with three more. The nice thing about that structure is it's pretty efficient. You're going to, you know, going to run more of them than you're not going to run. But it gives players the option of choosing their favorite one, choosing the next favorite, and then you skip the third. So I like that structure a lot. I think you can actually use it for a lot of different adventures. I'd love to see that structure used more often. I use it myself a lot of times because it's a great way of giving agency to the players to decide what they want to do, and also gives the option to remove an option that you clearly, like, they didn't choose it twice. It's probably not that great. And then come up with three new fresh ones. I think that that structure works really well. And that structure is in Icespire Peak. Icespire Peak is excellent, but that problem of killing first level characters is pretty rough. The same problem kind of exists with Lost Mine of Phandelver. Lost Mine of Phandelver, I also love. I'm actually think I might be knocking this down a level. Is this S tier? Is Lost Mine of Phandelver S tier? I'm going to put it at S tier. I think it's excellent. I loved Lost Mine of Phandelver. You can actually get it for free now. It's free on D&D Beyond. And I think that there's a PDF of it. Or at least there's a PDF of the first chapter of it floating around that is also freely released. And it's really good. My understanding, however, is that they expanded Lost Mine of Phandelver out into a campaign called Phandelver and Below the Shattered Obelisk, which actually modified the original Lost Mine of Phandelver for the worse. I didn't run it, so I'm not ranking it here, but I bought it and I kind of wish I hadn't because it's just sitting on my shelf. And all the reviews I read said, yeah, they actually made the whole thing worse, and there's a lot of problems with it and a lot of issues. But I'm going to put Lost Mine of Phandelver at S tier. So many people have run it. The reviews are so high. I've run it many, many times, and I think it's an excellent adventure. It's a little rough at first level. Those initial goblins can definitely kill you. If you just lower the number of goblins a little bit and then get them to second level before they go into the caves, everything works well. My only other complaint is that the last major dungeon is really big with a lot of stuff going on, and that can be kind of tricky to run. But it's a very open-ended adventure. The idea that it's like a 64-page book, but it has tons and tons of options for running a first to fifth level adventure in it, I think is really good. So I love Lost Mine of Phandelver, and I think that I am going to put that as S tier. Out of the Abyss. So I only ever ran half of Out of the Abyss, and I only ran it once, and I only ran it for one group. I didn't have a lot of the problems that other people had. I think that it is an underappreciated adventure. It is the only adventure that handles the capture of characters correctly, which is just start them captured, right? Just start them captured. Don't have a scene where they get captured because that just sucks. But if you begin the campaign with them captured, and maybe even let the players know you're going to begin, this is how the scenario is going to begin. You're captured by drow in an outpost, and that's where our adventure in the Underdark, and you don't know how you got there. That's where it's going to be. Let them know, and that way they're not losing anything. They're starting from a low point and working their way out. I actually enjoyed it when I ran it that way. There are other complaints, like too many NPCs. I never ran the second half, but a lot of people said that like the second half was really rough. I'm going to stick it in C. I don't have any C tiers, and we're going to put it in C tier. Because I don't think that it's terrible. And would I run it again? I'd run the first half of it again because I really thought that was fun. And I ran it for one group and we really had a good time with it. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. They tried to make it like Alice in Wonderland was a model that I think Chris Perkins used when he was kind of writing it. Or when they were writing the campaign draft of it, that I think that's what they did. And I really liked it. And I feel it did that. It really made the Underdark look like a cool place. And if you look at the Underdark in Baldur's Gate 3, there's a big section where you're traveling through the Underdark. A lot of the stuff that's going on in the Underdark there feels similar to the kind of stuff that's happening in Out of the Abyss. So if you like that part of it, you'll like that. Princes of the Apocalypse. A lot of people didn't like it. It's got a huge dungeon. It took me running it three times to realize how to run it, so that's not ideal. I didn't feel like I had to change a ton, but I did feel like I needed to understand it better. I'm going to stick that in C tier as well. I think it was fine, and I don't think my players really liked it, so you know, would I run it again? I might run it again. Like if somebody was like, I really wanted to like it, I think it'd be okay. It's not the end of the world. It's not the worst adventure I've ever run. So I think it sits fairly in C tier, and you know, there's definitely better, right? But I think that there's more to like in it than most people give it. So yeah, so there is that. Rise of Tiamat, kind of along the same lines as Horde of the Dragon Queen. I don't think it is better or worse. In my campaign, I changed a lot of it. Some of it I did feel like I had to change. Like there's a weird maze, hedge maze thing, you know, like hedge mazes at 14th level seemed weird. But I like the style a lot. I'm going to stick that into C tier. I feel like Horde was slightly easier to run than Rise of Tiamat was, maybe because of the level. And I felt like I had to change more than I wanted to. Scarlet Citadel. So Scarlet Citadel, I've run relatively recently. This is another Kobold Press adventure set in Midgard. I was running it in parallel to Empire of the Ghouls, and I did not like it nearly as much as Empire of the Ghouls. And I'm going to stick Scarlet Citadel firmly in D tier. And that is for a few reasons. The two biggest reasons are that it has no real good motivation for the characters to go on any adventures there. It is kind of built to be like an old school dungeon delve-y sort of campaign, except there's no reason to go down there. And there's no, and when you do go down there, you get punched in the face like right away. And the logical conclusion, which my players came to, was why would we ever go there again? So I had to make my own story about why they would go down there. I had to have a motivation for them to do it. And I had to make that work in order for the campaign to work. And that took a fair bit of work. The other one is it is the most dense, text dense RPG that I've had from like a major publisher in a long time. It's so wordy. And some of the rooms have descriptions that are like multiple pages long. Like I think there's like a couple of room descriptions that go on for two full pages of text. But even small rooms can sometimes have long areas of text. It is really clearly so dense in the amount of material that it was very hard to parse. It was very hard. Like I read it and I understood it. And then I go back and forget what I had read. And it's so hard to reference when you're running it at the table that I'd say it was definitely not a table, very table usable adventure. Now, the quality of it is really high, which is why it's not like a total F tier, is that the quality was really high. The rooms were cool. The design of it was really neat. Had lots of like verticality, lots of ways that you could go up and down. I really enjoyed it, but and my players liked it. My players liked it a lot. I don't know if it's the most memorable campaign we've ever run, but we definitely liked it a lot. And you know, so that would knock it up to D tier. But the problem of the density of the text and the lack of motivation really made that one a lot of work. Cursed Scroll, this is my gloaming campaign. Cursed Scroll 1 is by Kelsey Dione over at Arcane Library. I'm running that now for my Shadow Dark game. So here's where we start to get a little fuzzy, because are we reviewing Shadow Dark? Are we reviewing the gloaming? Where does that sit? So I'm going to start by throwing it straight into A tier, because it's absolutely A tier. The question is it S tier or not? The structure of the gloaming is awesome. And I really love the idea of like a campaign setting in a small booklet. This is like the opposite of Scarlet Citadel, that I was given a ton of material that I could use and change and manipulate any way I wanted. It could be a short adventure. It could be a long adventure. You can run it however you want. I feel like it gave me all of the material I needed to let my imagination run wild with it in order to run the campaign. And I'm loving it a lot. So I can't think of any reason not to make it an S tier campaign. I love this campaign. My players love this campaign. We're having a ball. There's definitely some little idiosyncrasies with Shadow Dark, which I talk about when I'm doing my Shadow Dark prep, but none of that is like, some of that is just me sort of learning the system. Some of it is just me getting used to it, or some of it is me just kind of letting go of some things that I'm probably hanging on to a little bit too tightly. But I really loved it. And like when you consider like the cost, and you consider not just the cost in money, but the cost in the time for you to digest it and to run it, I think it could work really well. Could you take it and run a 5e campaign with it? Maybe. Like it'd probably take a little bit of work, but really, why would you? Why not run it using Shadow Dark rules? Because Shadow Dark rules are really straightforward, easy to pick up. If you know 5e, you can know Shadow Dark. It's really a lot of fun. So I see no reason that Cursed Scroll one, the Gloaming, my Gloaming campaign, is not an S tier campaign. Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands is another really good example as a contrast to Scarlet Citadel. Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands, I was thinking about that today. There's no way that's not an S-tier campaign. I love Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands. I'm running this for my third gaming group. I have three gaming groups that I'm running. We're going through Shadowed Keep now. And just like the Gloaming, just like Cursed Scroll 1, the Gloaming, it is a campaign that I've been able to expand however I want. I added a lot of stuff that I wanted to. The book gives you a lot of like hints, almost like that idea of like giving you a hex crawl where the hex has something in it and then you blow that out into something much larger. There's a lot of freedom and a lot of flexibility for me to love, to build out the Shadowed Keep campaign the way I wanted. For my own campaign, I really wish I had not bothered to set it in Greyhawk, because I don't know Greyhawk that well, and I don't think we're really tapping into that, but I kind of wanted to have more of a campaign setting. But Raging Swan has a campaign setting built around Shadowed Keep that you can use. And the other interesting thing is how Crichton over at Raging Swan is continually developing Shadowed Keep, adding new stuff. I think later this year is going to be a new version of it that's going to be expanded even further. But when we talk about table usability, and this is a really good factor for me, something that I can easily use at my table, easy to digest during prep, easy to reference during play. There's a product design that really matters. And the product design of Shadowed Keep is excellent. It's second to none. I love it. I'm very inspired by it as a fellow creator. I really love it. Storm King's Thunder. So Storm King's Thunder, I ran Storm King's Thunder for two different groups. I really liked it. I felt like the adventure didn't give me all of the things that I needed to really run it. It was a really fun campaign. Like Empire of the Ghouls, it is a travelogue of the Sword Coast. You go all the way up and down the Sword Coast. It has sort of a yam-shaped design. It starts off with a really good starter adventure that I enjoyed a lot, and then expands out. But the expansion got so big and travel is so weird. You get one of the quests is like, oh, travel to Icewind Dale, 2,400 miles away to deliver a message. So I felt like I had to do more work with Storm King's Thunder than I did for other adventures. I'm going to drop it into the C tier. I think that's fair. I liked it. I don't know that I recommend it. I certainly don't recommend any of these other ones on the list. But if you really want like a big, wide-spanning adventure, it actually works better as a campaign setting than it does as an adventure. So if you think of Storm King's Thunder as the GM side of the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, then it actually works rather well. That if you kind of ignore the giant storyline, you can use that as sort of an overarching subplot, but don't think of it like an adventure and think of it like a campaign setting. Then it's not so bad. But as an adventure, it needs a lot of work. So I'm going to put it in B tier. I think it's fair to put that in B tier because I think it took a lot of work, but it offered a lot of opportunity for really fun campaigns. So I want to talk about Storm King's Thunder and the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide. I think the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide is an underappreciated book for one big reason. It is a player's book, not a GM's book. It is not a campaign source book for the Sword Coast. It is a player aid to tell them everything they need to know about the Sword Coast. It is written as an atlas from a player's perspective, where Storm King's Thunder is written almost like a campaign setting for the same material, which means those two books side by side, one given to the player to read and one given for the GM to run the scenario, actually works really well. I think if you wanted to run Storm King's Thunder, keeping that idea that the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide is the atlas that the characters, that the players can read to understand the Sword Coast, it works tremendously better than if you try to assume that Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide is a GM's campaign book, because it isn't. Obviously, it hit the mark because lots of people don't like it. Tomb of Annihilation. I loved Tomb of Annihilation. I ran that for two different groups as well. The Hex Crawl was really fun. However, it's got a couple of things that you have to work with. I'm going to put it in A tier because I like the structure so much. I take that back. I'm going to move it to B tier. I'm going to lower it a tier, which surprises me. But as I think about it now, having been abstracted from it for some time, it has major components to it that require a little bit of work. The general adventure plot doesn't make sense the way it's written, which is, hey, all of the souls of people are not making their way to the afterlife like they should. Something is siphoning them up at a global scale. Let's get a bunch of level one characters to go solve this for us by sending them into the jungle. Now, you can build your own intro to it, and it works really well. But then you get to the jungle, and you get to Port Nyanzaru, and then there's fun things like riding in dinosaur races and getting off in other adventures. The souls are getting sucked away. Like, there's no good motivation to not go driving as hard as you can for the end conclusion. This is something my friend Teos has talked about with Tomb of Annihilation, is that like that balance. So there are ways to fix it. And I have articles on Sly Flourish. If you're running Tomb of Annihilation, it's not too hard to fix, but you have to fix it or it doesn't work really well. But the other reason that I'm knocking it from an A tier to a B tier is that the shift in the style of the adventure changes so radically that many of my players said, I love the first half and I didn't like the second half. That when it turned into a mega dungeon crawl, they didn't like it nearly as much as they did on the adventures that they had along the way. And so I'm taking my players' consideration into account where I thought the dungeon was fun. I really enjoyed it. There were parts of it that I really liked. There's probably some parts of it you got to work on a little bit to make sure that they're totally fun. But I know my players had a much less of a fun time with the big dungeon crawl at the end than I did running it overall. So I'm going to knock that down to a B tier. It does have a good yam-shaped design, which I really like. But if you think of it, B tier is pretty good. My Numenera campaign I loved, my Horde of the Dragon Queen campaign I loved, my Storm King Thunder campaigns I loved, and Tomb of Annihilation I loved. So B tier and above, they're all pretty solid. Waterdeep Dragon Heist. So Waterdeep Dragon Heist is a short adventure. It's meant to only be like level 1 to 5. I ran this for two different groups as well. I had a lot of fun modifying the structure of this adventure to fit in between Horde of the Dragon Queen and Rise of Tiamat. I love the idea that the storyline from Horde of the Dragon Queen and Rise of Tiamat had taken place in every time I ran anything else in the setting. My players liked it a lot. However, the adventure does need a lot of work. In particular, there's a big chase scene that happens in the middle of the book that I hated how it ran. And I hated the idea that like, oh, there's this MacGuffin that you have to pick up. And there's a whole section in the book that says, by the way, if the players get a hold of the MacGuffin too early, here are ways that you can ensure that they can't keep a hold of the MacGuffin. That just sucks. Like that's just pure railroading, right? From beginning to end. But I really liked it. I say that, but like, I still really enjoyed the adventure. A lot of people really liked it. I just felt like it took more work. I'm probably going to stick that in B tier. I don't think that's C tier. One other big problem with it it wasn't a problem for me, which is why I'll probably keep it in B tier, but it is a problem for a lot of it. It's called Waterdeep Dragon Heist, and there's no heist. I think it actually, if you call it the Dragons of Waterdeep, that would have been a much better title. And I'll explain why. The Dragons of Waterdeep is actually about gold, not dragons, because a gold dragon is a coin in Waterdeep. So you call it Dragons of Waterdeep, and you get a little switcheroo where they think, oh, there's actual dragons in Waterdeep. And you're like, no, it's actually gold coins. Until you get to the end, and then there's an actual dragon. So then you go back to, no, there is a dragon. So I think it's a fun play on words if they had called it the Dragons of Waterdeep. But instead they called it Dragon Heist, and there's no heists. So that's kind of a bummer. But I'll put it in B tier. I think it was runnable. Would I run it again? Is a good question. And I don't know that I would run it again. I think I've had my fill, but I don't know if I'd run any of these that are in the B tier again. So that's a consideration. Spelljammer, in particular, the adventure Light of Xeraxis. Light of Xeraxis is the adventure that's in the Spelljammer box set. I was very disappointed by the Spelljammer box set because I thought it was their one chance to build a really good Spelljammer campaign setting, similar to Eberron Rising from the Last War, or Ravnica, or Theros, or another big setting book like that. Even something like Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. I wanted a book like that, and instead what I got was a monster book, a book with some weird player options, and a short adventure. I did run the adventure, though, and I really liked the adventure. I thought it was excellent. It does, however, suffer from a major problem that Wizards of the Coast adventures have had as of late, which is major NPCs that you're working for who betray you. I'm not going to name any other names, but there are two other adventures where I read it and saw that they had that and said, yep, I'm not running either of those. I don't know why somebody at Wizards of the Coast who's involved in kind of designing the themes of these adventures has trust issues, because we have had three adventures in a row. I think it's three adventures in a row where a major quest NPC betrays you. The issue with that is if the two things can happen in this situation. One is the characters figure out that they're going to be betrayed and then they change the entire course of the adventure and you're left with nothing, because why would they do the thing if they find out that the person that they're working for is going to betray them? That is a major issue. If the players figure out early, then it's bad. But two is your players are never going to trust you again. Let's say they do trust the NPC, and let's say you do go through the whole adventure. Then you finish it out and it's just, oh, this whole time we were getting hoodwinked. Now, guess what? Your players are never going to trust you again. So now you've broken, in my opinion, broken trust with the players. Now, it's one thing to have surprise endings. I'm not talking about having a surprise ending. I'm not talking about information that the players don't know that they discover at the end. I'm talking about information that would have changed how they would have done the adventure, and particularly if it negates the whole purpose of the adventure. That's not great. Luckily, in light of Xeraxis, it is not hard to change that. It is not hard to say, hey, this NPC who was going to betray the characters now is just conflicted and now might need to be convinced. And I ran it that way and it worked really well. Otherwise, I think the structure of Light of Xeraxis is really good. It is a linear adventure, but it really did capture fun spelljammery stuff. I really liked it. So I am probably going to stick that in... Do I dare put it in A tier? Let's put it in A tier and see what that looks like. Do I like it as much as Empire of the Ghouls? No, I did not. Do I like it as much? No. So it's going to go to B tier. B tier, did I like it as much as Tomb of Annihilation? Yeah, I liked it as much as Dragon Heist. I don't know if I liked it as much as Storm King's Thunder or Horde of the Dragon Queen or Numenera. You know what? I am going to knock both Dragon Heist and Light of Xeraxis down to C tier. Because I don't think that either of those two short adventures stand up nearly as well in my mind as Storm King's Thunder, Tomb of Annihilation, Horde of the Dragon Queen, or Numenera did for me. I like those adventures better. So I'm going to move those down to C tier. And I think that Light of Xeraxis, I'm kind of surprised because I really did like Light of Xeraxis. But I didn't like it as much as I like those other ones. And so that means that C tier is not like a... You know, C tier is not a bad spot. So, you know, I definitely think like a cutoff, you know, a cutoff would be that CD tier. But I mean, even then, I think I'm probably being overly harsh on Blades in the Dark. Could Blades be promoted? I'm going to promote, honestly, if I promote Blades in the Dark to C tier, I'm only doing so because it's an indie RPG that I really want to like. So I'm going to stop myself from doing that because I really want to like Blades in the Dark. And there are lots of aspects I do like. I just found it really hard to run. I bet you most people would have that in C tier, at least C tier and probably higher. So I'm going to keep it. I feel bad about it being in D tier, but I feel like that's me being as honest as I can. So then we come to the last adventure that we're going to talk about today, which is Dragons of Stormwreck Isle in the starter set. I am putting that into S tier. I love that adventure. It is a short adventure. It has, you know, 3-4 really fun little things that you can do. It doesn't kill your first level characters. It has a built-in safety net to ensure that new DMs and new players aren't going to get just wiped out by the first set of zombies, and then it gives room for the GM to screw up and still recover. I really think that that is a fantastic adventure. I like it a lot. I think it's highly underrated. I don't know many people talking about it. I don't know many people running it, but I really think that it is an excellent adventure. I have no complaint. I can't think of anything that I don't like with Dragons of Stormwreck Isle. It's a nice, short, easy to run, and yet it has a lot of cool lore in it. It's got lore about Forgotten Realms in it. It's got lore about gods and minions. It even has some room to kind of expand the adventures out in different areas if you want to. So I really, really liked Dragons of Stormwreck Isle. I like it. I think it is better than Lost Mine of Phandelver because, well, I know, I'm going to keep Lost Mine of Phandelver there. So, you know, I think it's as strong an adventure as we have. So that is the last adventure. So a quick summary, particularly for our friends on listening on a podcast. S tier includes Wild Beyond the Witchlight, Curse of Strahd, Eberron Rising from the Last War, Lost Mine of Phandelver, Curse Scroll 1, The Gloaming from Shadowdark, Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands by Raging Swan, and the starter set adventure Dragons of Stormwreck Isle for D&D. That is my S tier. Those seven adventures, those seven campaigns are my top tier campaigns. What's pretty great is I have more S tiers than any other tier, right? That means I have a lot of ones that I like, and that means I've run a lot of ones I like. A tier includes Shadow of the Demon Lord, Empire of the Ghouls, Ghosts of Saltmarsh, and Dragon of Icespire Peak. Those are also really, really good with only usually just like one small flaw. The only reasons why those really aren't in S tier. B tier includes Numenera, my Numenera campaign that I ran, and Numenera overall, Horde of the Dragon Queen, Storm King's Thunder, and Tomb of Annihilation. There's an interesting thing there about sort of the open-ended adventures that are there. Again, B tiers have a little bit more flaws than I would say the A tiers have. There's a little bit more work that you have to do in order to get it to the right place. That's kind of the line that you have to draw, is where do you actually have to do a fair amount of work? That's where things get to change. C tier includes a lot of older adventures. Out of the Abyss, Princes of the Apocalypse, The Rise of Tiamat, Waterdeep Dragon Heist, and Light of Xeraxis. So those last two are a little bit more modern, but the first three are like some of the, I think they're the first three adventures that came out for 5th edition. So that's kind of interesting. They required more work, or I felt like I had to modify the campaign pretty significantly in order to get it to a place that I liked it. Or they had like kind of a major flaw, like I would say Light of Xeraxis did. D tier includes my Blades in the Dark campaign. Again, I feel bad about it because I feel like other people have a lot more fun with Blades than I did. So don't take my point there to damn it. So my D tier includes Blades in the Dark and Scarlet Citadel. And then we have my F tier, the ones where I really regret having tried them at all and really wish I had instead spent my time on something else. And that would be Rime of the Frost Maiden and Descent into Avernus, two relatively recent adventures. I don't know if they're that recent, a couple years old now, that both in my mind required way more work to get into a state that made them a fun adventure for myself and the group than the money and the time and energy that I spent digesting those campaigns. So those are the bottom of my list. So what did I learn from this? And I'm very curious. I want to know, more importantly, what you learned from this. What are some of the criteria that you use to help you define what good adventures are? I think by looking at this list, we can generally tell that I like having lightweight campaign settings that let me expand them out in lots of different directions. And I feel like most of the ones in like the S and A tier let me do that. Shadow of the Demon Lord, I built my own. Wild Beyond the Witchlight, I built my own. Curse of Strahd was, you know, I didn't really build my own, but I've let it certainly run in a lot of different areas. Eberron, all of those, that clearly is my criteria. I want an adventure structure or a campaign structure with lots of open stuff that lets me build it out in ways that I want to build it out in order to make it really custom made for my group and for my ideals. I also want ones that are written really well and very easy for me to digest and very easy for me to reference and pick up. A lot of these are short, right? Like I think of the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, of the 11 adventures that are in my S and A tier, a lot of them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them are all short adventures. And then a couple of them are campaign settings more so than longer adventures. So clearly, like, don't throw, if you know what criteria for me is it a big meaty adventure, big complicated meaty adventure with lots and lots of words that really is sort of like a linear storytelling kind of thing, then I'm not really that interested. So for me, the design of the product matters a lot. One thing I will say, because you can also look and say, Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands, who's developed by one person for Raging Swan, and Curse Scroll 1, also developed by one person and is an indie one, is standing up there at the same tier as Curse of Strahd, the most popular adventure, I think probably of all time, and Eberron Rising from the Last War. And that's because production value doesn't matter that much to me as long as the product design is really, really good. In fact, a lot of these have very high production value. Scarlet Citadel, really high production value. Descent into Avernus and Rime of the Frostmaiden, excellent production value. They look like really excellent books. Artwork is fantastic. The maps are fantastic. And they're at the bottom of the list. And the reason why is that production quality doesn't matter near as much to me as product design. And by product design, I mean a design of a product that's built for me to be able to build the kind of stories and adventures that I want to be able to build with my friends around the table. That is a clear criteria that I can see coming out of this list. The heavier the story is, usually the lower it is on the list. So there's a couple odd ones out, like Empire of the Ghouls has a pretty heavy story. Wild Beyond the Witchlight has a pretty heavy story. Both of those, I felt like I had a lot of room to run. So giving me the room to run really works. So what that tells me is I'm going to be far happier with more focused campaign settings than I will be on big story-focused campaign adventures. I now kind of know that about myself, and that helps me out. But I want to know what you know about it. I want to know what kind of criteria you use to determine whether an adventure is good. And how are you going to use that to decide whether you should buy a product in the future or what kind of campaigns you're going to run for your group? That I'm really interested in hearing about that. So please leave a comment, send me an email, you know, talk about it on the Sly Flourish Discord server, all that kind of stuff that you can do. thank you so much for this. I really hope you had fun. I had fun. I've been looking forward to doing this for a long time. If you enjoyed the show and you want more stuff like this from me, please consider subscribing to the Sly Flourish newsletter. It is absolutely free to sign up. You get an adventure generator for signing up, and you get a weekly email that has all of, has an RPG-related article in it, plus links to all of the other work that I do. There's no reason not to sign up. It's absolutely worth it. You can also support me directly on Patreon. Patrons get to support me directly with all of this work. They get to they help fund all the work that I do. They also get access to a whole bunch of tools to help them run all of their different kind of RPGs, tools, accessories, exclusive adventures, previews of work, all that kind of stuff. And they can join the Lazy DM community over in the Sly Flourish Discord server. It's a fantastic community. We chat there all week long. Really, really love it. So please check all of those out. Thank you so much. Have a great day and get out there and play an RPG.